right. We had started a discussion on what I referred to as the Shoftim HaKtanim, or the minor Shoftim. Specifically, the five Shoftim mentioned in Sefer Shoftim, in the book, for whom there's no story attached. Essentially, just a reference that the Shofet existed, functioned in a particular region of the country, in a particular city, and looking at the chart that cuts across the text in columns, these are all this is all we have for each of these five Shoftim. Two before Yiftach, three between Yiftach and Shimshon, Tola ben Pua, Ya'ira Giladi, Itzan mi-Bet Lechem, Ilona Zvulani, Avdon ben Hillel ha-Pir Atoni, Misheva Defray. Those are the five Shoftim. And what we began to look at was the parallel text that the Navi describes for each of them, observing that there is a certain structure that is common to the reference to each of these five, common to each other and unique, separate from all other Shoftim. In other words, this structure doesn't have a parallel to any of the other major Shoftim. Doesn't describe other major Shoftim as having 30 children riding on 30 donkeys over 30 cities, etc. This is a unique structure to these Shoftim. Common to all of them is that they functioned as Shoftim, Vayishpot, where they lived, where they died, and where they were buried, and how many years they were a Shofet for. What I had left for a discussion for today was the piece in the middle that is specific to three of the five minor Shoftim, specifically Ya'ir HaGiladi, the first, Yiftzan mi-Bet Lechem, and Avdon ben Hillel ha-Pir Atoni. And that's the piece in the middle that talks about the number of children that they have. In the case of Ya'ir HaGiladi, that's essentially the first time we encounter this phenomenon. It tells us that he judged Israel for 22 years. Vahilo shloshim banim, rochvim al shloshim ayarim, ushloshim ayarim lahem. 30 sons riding on 30 donkeys. An ayir is a baby aton, or a baby female donkey. Right?
A colt, an ass colt.
A colt is the child, right? An ass colt. So you have a chamor and an aton, and the ayer is the colt. So you have whatever general. Under the general definition of a donkey, ushloshim ayarim lahem, 30 cities they had. Lahem yikru chavot Ya'ir ad hayom hazeh asher be'eretz hagilad. The 30 cities in the area of Chavot Ya'ir till this day on in the land of the Gilad. Similarly, Yiftzan from Beit Lechem. Ivehilo shloshim banim ushloshim banot shilach chutzah, 30 sons, 30 daughters he sent out, ushloshim banot tavil livanav min hachutz, and 30 daughters he brought to his sons from the outside. So essentially, he has 60 chuppas, right? 60 weddings, 30 sons, 30 daughters he marries out, 30 daughters he brings into his 30 sons, and judged Israel for 7 years. In the last case, Avdon ben Yilel piratoni. 40 banim u30 bnei banim rochvim al 70 ayarim. 40 sons, 30 grandsons riding over on 30 ayarim, ass colts, or 70 donkeys. So I have 40 plus 30 combined to 70. So there's a number of strange phenomena here. that are deserving of our focus, attention, and interest. And they're obvious. Right? They don't need to be restated, but we'll state them anyway. The number of children, the notion of ribui banim, this kind of proliferation of children, 30, 40, 30 plus 40 grandchildren, 30 plus sons and 30 daughters marrying out, etc. So we have the ribui banim, just the multiplication. We have the numbers in round terms, 30, 40, 60, 70. There's something odd about the numbers. It's not just that he had 25 children, 30 children, 33 children, 38 children. No.
That's symmetrical numbers.
It's very symmetrical. It's an odd symmetry. Add to that the pun, the very significant and biblical pun of an ear and an ayer. Right? The ayer being the donkey, the ear being the city. What is the significance of riding the donkey in a city? Riding the ayer in an ear. And each of these sons, 30 sons, is riding an ayer in an ear. The whole structure here is odd and really cries out for some explanation. Before we do that, we're going to do a parenthetical piece, which is to look at the first, and I want to sort of deal with all the tangential pieces first, and then we'll come back to the core discussion. The tangential piece is Chavot Ye'ir. Let's take a look at the first case, which is Ye'ir Giladi. In the text in Tanakh, it's Perek Yud Pasuk Dalet, which you have it on the sheet as well. Ye'ir Giladi, starting with Pasuk Gimel, Vayakom Acharav Ye'ir HaGiladi, Vayishpot Et Yisrael 22 Shana. After him, meaning after Tola Ben Pua, Ye'ir HaGiladi judges over 22 years, that's the piece we're going to come back to, the 30 sons, the 30 cities, 30 donkeys. Lahem yikra'u Chavot Ye'ir ad hayom hazeh. These cities called Chavot Ye'ir, asher be'eretz Gilad, in the land of the Gilad. Vayamar Ye'ir v'yikaver b'kamon, Ye'ir dies and he's buried in Kamon. What's odd about the reference to Ye'ir HaGiladi having these sons in cities called Chavot Ye'ir in the land of the Gilad? What's odd about that reference? Where the Balkore will fill us in.
It's in Matos, same names, same
everything. It's in Matos. This is a story that belongs in Chumash, not in Navi. Eyebrows go up, and if Balkore says it is so, then it is so. That is true. So let's go back to Chumash and see what's going on. First of all, a little bit of Yichus, I think, is in order.
Are you saying that the trop indicates that, or it's the same trop that you would find in
trop?
No, just the words.
Just the words.
Trop?
You see the same people.
No, the story. The story. The story seems to be a story from Chumash, not from Shofet, not from Shoftim.
The question is, when's the timing?
So let's first see the story of Chumash, and then we'll figure out what the problem is. So first of all, a little bit of Yichus. Here we have Ye'ir HaGiladi. Ye'ir from the Gilad. Ye'ir, however, is a name that should be familiar to us, at least
from Pinchas.
Pinchas? Well, let's start with Matos. Bamidbar Lamed Beis. Also known as Bamidbar Perek Lamed Bet.
Lamed Beis.
Okay. I'm bilingual, so, you know, it doesn't... we haven't figured out by now. I'm bilingual. All right. Do you remember the story of Reuven and Gad and half of Menashe? Remember the conversation with Reuven and Gad and half of Menashe? Moshe is engaged in a conversation with Reuven and Gad in Perek Lamed Bet. Just to do a quick review, let's start from the various pieces from the beginning of the parak. Just do a quick review. Umikne Rav haya livnei Reuven v'livnei Gad atzum ma'od. Reuven and Gad have much cattle. V'ayru et eretz Ya'azer ve'et eretz Gilad v'inei makom mikne. They saw the land of the Gilad, which was the land taken from Sichon and Og in the battles of Parshat Chukat, Moshe, and the first battles in the eastern side of the Yarden. And it was grazing land, therefore appropriate for the cattle that Reuven and Gad had as shepherds. B'nei Gad, B'nei Reuven, come to Moshe and to the leadership and say, Atarot v'divon v'yazer v'nimna v'cheshbon v'el ale u'shvam u'nevo u'va'on. That's a very intelligent and articulate pasuk.
No verb.
It's a pasuk with no verb. Hence, you should just be aware about something about psukim. The notion that a pasuk correlates to what in English we would call a sentence is untrue. There is no direct correlation between a pasuk and a sentence. A pasuk is not a sentence. A pasuk is a unit of chumash. A sentence can carry over multiple psukim, and sometimes two or three sentences can be included in one pasuk. There is no direct correlation between pasuk and sentence. This statement, Atarot divon yazer nimra cheshbon el ale usvam unvo uvaon, comma, ha'aretz asher hika Hashem lifnei adat Yisrael, the land that God brought us and conquered, helped us conquer before the congregation of Israel, eretz miknehi. This is a land of cattle, and we are shepherding people of cattle. The list of is a list of cities. It's the list of cities in the region of the territorial conquest of the land from Sichon as well as from Og. Some of the names of the places will be familiar. We'll see Cheshbon is over here. Ya'azeh is over here. Aroer is over here. The tribal area, the area between the Arnon and the Yabok, this was the area that they had conquered from Sichon. The names of all of these, I didn't bring this as a map because hadn't thought of doing this piece, but... all of the names of the cities that they just mentioned, Atarot Divon Ya'azer Nimra Cheshbon El Aleh Svam Nvo Va'on, are all cities in the region between these two rivers, the Arnon and the Yabok, the tribal territory known as the area of Sichon, that was conquered from Sichon. That's the area in which Reuven and Gad come and say, we want to settle here. Who is Moshe talking to? He's talking to?
Reuven
and God. That's very important to note, that he's talking to Reuven and God. Moshe's response. The request has not yet been made. This is all introduction. There's a paragraph break in the middle of the conversation, which is usually an indication of a time to pause, digest, and prepare yourself for what comes next. Vayamru, im matzan lechem beinecha yutan et haaretz hazot lavadecha lachuza al tavidenu et hayarden. We want this land. We want to stay here. Pasuk Vav, Moshe's response. Vayomer Moshe livnei Gad livnei Reuven. Moshe answered, to whom? Who is he talking to? For the second time. B'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven. Clear. Ha'achechem yevo l'milchama v'atem teshu po. Your brothers will go to war and you'll stay here? What kind of a business is that? And then he gets very angry at them. He goes into a whole tirade about Chet Maraglim and you who have come and tried to do the same thing as your brothers and Chet Maraglim, and it's this whole story all over again. And he gets, literally loses his temper with them. Pasuk Tet Zayin is the response of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven by saying, no, you misunderstand. We don't mean that our brothers will go to war and we'll stay here. We mean that we'll go and fight and then come back, but that the territorial division that we want for our people, for our children, is this territory, this region of the land of Sichon. Moshe responds and says, so be it. If that's how you'll do, you'll go, you'll fight, Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem is a reference to the other side of the Yarden. Pasuk Chav, Vayomer Alehem Moshe. Moshe says to them, if you will go before God to war, meaning you will cross the Yarden and go to war with your brothers, then you may come back here and settle. Pasuk Chaf Hei. Everybody with me? Vayomer b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven el Moshe lemor, avadecha yasu kasher adoni mitzaveh. Response? From whom?
B'nei Gad
u'b'nei Reuven. We will do exactly as you instruct us. We will build cities and we will build places for our children. We will stay here in the cities in the area of the Gilad, Berea Gilad, and we will cross over the Yarden with our brothers and we will fight with them, and then we will come back and settle. Pasuk Chavtet, Moshe seals this deal with a contract. Vayomer Moshe Alehem, he's now speaking to Yoshua as to confirm this deal. Im yavru v'nei Gad v'nei Reuven itchem et hayarden kol ha'chalutz l'muchama lifnei Hashem. If Reuven and Gad will cross over and fight with you on the eastern side of the west side of the Yarden, v'nichbasha aras lifneichem, then once the land is conquered, then unetatem lehem et eretz ha'gilad la'achuzah, then you can give them the land of the Gilad. See where it says Gilad? Now the southern part of the Gilad is a mountain range. This is important to understand what comes next. The Gilad is a very large mountain range that runs from, if you can see where it says the word God here, you see this dark area? Right, that's the southern part of the mountain range of the Gilad, and it runs all the way up here into the base of the Golan Heights, area known as the Bashan. In Parshat Chukat, there were two major battles that Moshe fought. One was the territory of Sichon, which had originally belonged to Moab, Ammon and Moab, land of Sichon, between the Arnon and the Yabok River. That was the war against Sichon, king of Amori. Then he turned and he fought a battle against Og, king of the Bashan. The Bashan is the Golan Heights. And then he comes back down. It's this area here that Reuven and Gad made a request for. It's to this area that the conversation was. And he said, we'll settle all our family here in the Gilad, and then we will go and cross over Lifnei Hashem. So for the fourth time, to whom is Moshe referring when he says the deal was made? B'nei Gad, B'nei Reuven. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, to confirm the deal again, Ve'anu B'nei Gad, this time to Yoshua, whatever Moshe says, we will do. We will go first, Chalutzim, the first line, into the land of Canaan, and we will fight, and then we will get our Nachla me'ever li'arden on the other side of the Yard. Clear? I didn't count the total number, but there's at least four, maybe five psukim in which the conversation is iterated and reiterated between Moshe and B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven. And then we have a remarkable pasuk. Ve'iten lehem Moshe, livnei Gad, v'livnei Reuven, v'lachatzi shevet Menashe ben Yosef, et mamlechet Sichon melech Emori, ve'et mamlechet Og melech Bashan. He gave the land of Sichon and Og to the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe ben Yosef. So, of course, all the Mefarshim raised the question, where did Menashe, half of Menashe, come from in the conversation? Where did the tribe of Menashe come from in this conversation? This conversation was between Reuven, Gad, and Moshe. When it comes, and the whole deal was with Reuven and Gad. There was no deal made with Menashe. The contract, signed, sealed, and delivered, was with Reuven and Gad. And in the last second, Moshe takes the land of Sichon and of Og, and he hands it to Reuven, Gad, and Menashe. Now that's somewhat of an optical illusion, because he doesn't take the land of Sichon and Og and hand it to Reuven, Gad, and Menashe. He takes the land of Sichon and Og. He takes the land of Sichon and Og, and he hands it to Reuven and Gad and Menashe. And for the purpose of the tape, let me qualify that because you can't see what I just did. The land of Sichon goes to Reuven and Gad, and the land of Og goes to Menashe. The conversation up until this point had only been about the territory between the Yabok and the Arnon River. Remember, it started with a list of cities. That's the tribal region of Sichon. It was there the conversation was focused, and there the conversation was focused with Reuven and Gad. When it came time to divvy up the land, Moshe includes the territorial region of Og as well. And the territorial region of Og he hands to half of Menashe. So far, you all with me? The question is why? What happened here at the end of the parsha to throw half of Menashe into the picture?
Did Menashe travel with Reuven and Gad in the camp?
No.
Was he part of that, you know, when they marched three at a time?
No. The trio is Reuven, Gad, and Shimon. And Shimon loses their territorial rights because of the story of Pinchas, so they get taken out of the picture, but that's the tribal group, the flag, the banner of Reuven, Gad, and Shimon. Now, half Menashe was not part of that group. The mystery of how the half of Menashe got lumped in with Reuven and Gad has mystified Mefarshim, and all kinds of answers are given. Some very not sure what the term is, but creative description about how Moshe was afraid that Reuven and Gad would be lost to the assimilation on the other side of the Yarden, so he attached to Reuven and Gad half of Menashe, kind of using them as a kind of shlichim. Figured that because it's half a tribe, that half a tribe would always be connected to the other half a tribe, so they wouldn't get lost in the shuffle, and they would anchor Reuven and Gad to the Jewish people. All kinds of issues. But the mystery of Reuven and Gad of half Menashe remains a mystery. So I'll share with you a possible resolution of this mystery, which will bring us now to the story of Chavot Ya'ir. What happens next? Let's continue the story. Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Vayivnu b'nei Gad et Divon ve'et Atarot ve'et Aroer. B'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven then go and build the cities or settle in the cities that they were promised. So, makes sense. Gad goes and settles in the cities of Divon, Atarot, Aroer, ve'et Atarot Shefan, ve'et Yazer, ve'et Yogbaha, ve'et Beit Nimra, ve'et Beit Haran, Arei Mivtza, ve'Gidrotzon. These are the cities for Gad. Reuven, v'nei Reuven, בנו את חשבון ואת אל עלה ואת קרייתיים ואת נבו ואת בעל מעון ומוסבות שם ואת סיבמה. And they call these names after the names that they, the cities they built. ויקרו בשמות את שמות הערים אשר בנו. If what's all I had, then it would make sense. Reuven and God requested cities. They had to build the cities. Moshe gave them the cities, and they went and built them. Then the pasuk says the following. Vayelchu b'nei Machir ben Menashe Gilada. The children of Machir ben Menashe went to the Gilad. Vayilkeduha. Vayilkeduha means they captured it. Vayoresh et ha'emori asher ba. They disposed or dispossessed the Amorites who were there. Vayiten Moshe et ha'gilad l'machir ben Menashe. Moshe gave the Gilad to a man by the name of Machir ben Menashe. Vayesher ba.
Just one family?
The fam.
Just that one?
That was, right, they're divided up. So Reuven gets...
That's a whole tribe.
Okay, so this is also a whole tribe. This is the children of Menashe, of Machir ben Menashe. And so what you're getting to, we'll come to in a second. Vayeshaba, they settled there. V'yair ben Menashe halach v'yilkod et chavotahem. Yair ben Menashe went and settled in the chavotahem. Chavot are... let's translate chava... How do they translate chavot?
Villages.
Okay.
But it means more like pastures, doesn't it?
Chava in modern Hebrew is a farm, but I don't think that's what it refers to. It's like cities, little villages, little cities in a region. Vayikraten chavot Yair. And he calls them chavot Yair. V'novach halach vayikodet knat v'et penoteh vayikala novach b'shmo. So I have the various cities being built, settled in, and conquered in the area of the Bashan, area of the Gilad, by Machir ben Menashe or his descendants, and by Yair ben Menashe. Who are Machir ben Menashe and Yair ben Menashe? That's really the key question. And if I look at Yair ben Menashe going and conquering cities and calling those cities Chavot Yair, and then I turn to Sefer Shoftim and I read, Yair Hagiladi, with 30 sons and 30 donkeys and 30 cities, calling those cities Chavot Yair. Are we talking about the same Yair from the Gilad? I highly doubt it.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
It could be that those were the cities called Chavot Yair from the time of the...
The great ancestor called Yair. And this is now a great grandson.
Now they were the rulers of those 30 cities called Chavot Yair. It doesn't mean they conquered other cities and named those different cities Chavot Yair.
So the reference to Yair Giladi settling in cities, in 30 cities called Chavot Yair, you're saying is going back to the 30 is the same 30 cities, same story as the original cities, they're just settling in the cities that were originally called Chavot Yair?
But here it doesn't say they settled in those cities, it just says that they ruled over those cities. Here in Sefer Shoftim, it implies the cities existed already.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I have reason I think that's a partial answer, but I can't tell you why I think that yet. I will. And there's a piece missing, and that's the pasuk in Devayamim, which I want to get to, that says that these were in the days of Moshe, these were 60 cities. So the numbers are off. So if talking about the same cities, then the numbers trouble me. But since I haven't given you the numbers yet, I can't. Can't very rightly do that. So hold that that thought for a second, and we'll come back to it. For now, I'm more curious about Yair and Menashe, Yair and Machir, and the relationship between
the family,
them.
It mentions Machir, but does not mention Yair.
Okay, so that is true. In Pinchas, when the tribe, when the lineage is given, we have, where is it? Perach Chavav, Pasuk, B'nei Menashe. Do you see that? Perach Chavav, Pasuk Chav Tet. B'nei Menashe. Does everybody have that? L'machir, Mishpachat HaMachiri. So Machir is the firstborn of Menashe. U'machir holid et. Does everybody have it? Where I'm reading? Bamidbar Parachavav Pasachav Tet. Pasha Pinchas. B'nei Menashe, Machir. His oldest is Machir. U'machir holid et Gilad. Machir's oldest is Gilad. LeGilad Mishpachat HaGiladi. Then we have the children of Gilad, Yeser Mishpachat HaEzri, etc. And then we have all the different names of the children. So I have a reference there to Machir ben Menashe and Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. Do you see that? And in our case, in Parshat Matot, I have Moshe giving the land of the Gilad to Machir ben Menashe. What's the problem? The problem is really quite simple. What's the problem?
There's no Ya'ir ben Menashe.
Well, we'll get to Ya'ir in a minute. We'll get to who Ya'ir ben Menashe is in a second. But before that, what's the problem?
Is the place called Gilad after the grandson?
Is the place called Gilad after the grandson, or is the grandson called Gilad after the place? That's mystery number one. Mystery number two, Moshe gives the Gilad to Machir ben Menashe. What's the problem?
Here he was giving it to Reuven and Gad.
Well, we identified number one. So problem number one is he's talking about Reuven and Gad, and we throw his in half of Menashe. Problem number two is Machir's the genealogy of Menashe. Machir, Gilad. Moshe gives the Gilad to Machir ben Menashe. That doesn't bother anybody? Who is Menashe?
Yosef's son.
Correct? Out. So Yosef, Menashe, Machir, Gilad. Moshe gives the land of the Gilad to Machir ben Menashe. Is that not bother anybody?
Yeah, to Menashe himself.
How old is Machir ben Menashe? Just do a quick calculation in your head. How old must he be? At least. This is the end of the 40 years.
It doesn't say you give him to Machir, to Bnei Machir.
Well, it's Vayiten Moshe to Gilad leMachir ben Menashe.
But he means the family of Machir.
Oh, so it means the family of Machir ben Menashe. I can buy that. So
doesn't mean him, you know.
So who is Ya'ir ben Menashe? Halach vayilkodot chavotahem. And just to make life more interesting, in the Pasuk in Bereishit it says that Vayar Yosef leEphraim b'nei Shilashim gam b'nei Machir ben Menashe yuldu al berkei Yosef. The children of Machir ben Menashe were born when Yosef was still alive. The children of Machir ben Menashe, firstborn, by the way, named Gilad, were born when Yosef was still alive. So a very strange phenomenon. I have Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe, born in the days of Yosef, the land of the Gilad given to Machir ben Menashe, to the family of Machir ben Menashe, in the midst of the story of Reuven and Gad. I don't know if I've succeeded in confusing you. If I haven't yet, then I'll continue to try. If I have, raise your hand, I can stop and I can say, okay, great, we've achieved our goal, and now we can resolve some of these mysteries. This is very confusing. Just to make life more interesting, take a look in Devarim Perek Gimel. Devarim Perek Gimel. Moshe is recording the story of the 40 years. Sorry, specifically at this point in Perek Gimel, he's talking about the conquest of the cities of Sichon and Og, the two major battles, the big cities, the fortified cities, takes all of the cities from the two kings, Sichon and Og, Pasuk Yud Bet. That land of Sichon and Og, we conquered, inherited at that time. From Aroer on the banks of Nachal Arnon, right, and half of the mountains of the Gilad, that's from Sichon. The land of Sichon, from our era, Nachal Arnon, and half of the southern half of the Gilad, I gave to Reuven and Gad. The Yeter HaGilad, the rest of the land of the Gilad. The Chol HaBashan, Mamlechat Og, and all of the Bashan, meaning the Golan Heights, the land of Og, Natati L'chatzi Shevet HaMenashe, I gave to half of Menashe. Kol Chevel HaArgov, remember that phrase, Chevel HaArgov, we're going to come to it in a moment. That land of Chevel Argov. Why didn't I give it to him? Read the next verse. Ya'ir ben Menashe lakach et kol Chevel Argov. Ya'ir ben Menashe took the entire region of Chevel Argov. Ad gvul ha'gshuri v'ma'achati, all the way up to the ma'acha. Gshur v'ma'acha. Here, in the Golan Heights. Vayikra otam al shmo et habashan, Chavot Yair, at hayom hazeh. And he named them after himself, Chavot Yair, until this day. Ulemachir natati et hagilad. I gave the gilad to the machir. Why did we jump back to the story of Yair ben Menashe? In the middle of the story of Moshe's conquest of the land of Og, which he gave to Machir or to Bnei Machir. Why does Yair keep jumping into the story? So the real question is, who is this Yair? Right? Who is this Yair? And why does he take cities? And why does Moshe throw this story into the midst of the story of Reuven? So I told you, there's a piece of the puzzle missing. And the piece of the puzzle often gets filled in from Divrei Hayomim, which is that sefer in Tanakh which nobody ever reads or learns, because it's sort of stuck at the end. And if you take our last flip for now, if we take a look in the beginning of Divrei Hayomim, it gives us the Yuchas and it tells us exactly who this Yair ben Menashe is. And once we know that, we will have the answer, I think, to the mystery of Moshe's conversation with Reuven and God. Divrei Hayomim Aleph, Perek Bet, starting with Pasuk Chav Aleph.
I'm sorry, what part of the Perek?
Perek Bet. The very beginning of Divrei Hayomim. This is a Perek, deals with the lineage of the tribes of Israel. It's going through each one of the different tribes, starting with Yehuda. Bnei Yehuda goes to the whole list of who's the children of Yehuda, the grandchildren of Yehuda. Everybody have it? Divrei Hayomim Aleph Perek Bet, starting with Pasuk Yud with Chaf Aleph. Who are the children? First of all, let's go. Just go back. Quick lineage. Who are the children of Yehuda? What are the names of the children of Yehuda? So let's just go quickly back to the very beginning. Perek Pasuk Gimel. Bnei Yehuda, Er v'Onan v'Sheila. Initially, Yehuda has three children: Er v'Onan and Sheila. Then you have the whole story of Tamar and the death of Er and Onan. Finally, Yehuda marries Tamar, and he has two children, Peretz and Zarach. B'nei Peretz, Chetzron v'Chamul. B'nei Peretz, Peretz, in biblical language we would say, Peretz begat Chetzron and Chamul. Why is that relevant? Because take a look in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. V'achar ba Chetzron. Who is Chetzron? Who is Chetzron? Chetzron is Yehuda's grandson. Chetzron marries Bat Machir Avi Gilad. Marries the daughter of Machir. Father of Gilad. V'hu lekacha, v'hu ben shishim shana. So Chetzron, Yehuda's grandson, marries the daughter of Machir ben Menashe.
So Gilad's sister.
Gilad's sister, correct. Okay. And they have atelid lo et zguv. Usguv holid et Yair.
Is that? He's from the tribe of Yehuda. He's not from Manasseh. His father's from Yehuda.
Vayhilo esrim v'shalosh arim be'eretz ha-Gilad. 23 cities in the land of the Gilad.
So Chetzron moved into his wife's family and tribe, but by birth, he's a from the tribe of Yehuda.
Interesting, right? Okay, let's go on. So I have 23 cities. Correct. So I have 23 cities. Now, well, what's interesting is this Yair Hagiladi, this Yair Ben Menashe, which is really another way of saying Yair, great grandson of Menashe, right, is a great grandson, which puts him, if Menashe is 250, if Machir Ben Menashe is 250 years old at the time of Moshe, so puts him at 175. You understand my problem? Neither Machir nor Yair should be alive in the story of Moshe. They're too early.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention they should have all died out in the desert in the 40 years.
And they should have all died in the desert in the 40 years. So either they're very old, and there's a Medrash that says that they're very old, or the story of the conquest of this area of the Gilad, named after, remember they're all naming areas and cities after themselves. Conquers cities and he calls them Chavot Yair. Conquers a region and he calls it Gilad. Gilad is not named because he was born in the land of the Gilad. The Gilad is named because it was the land settled by, conquered by, and settled by a man by the name of Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. But you understand that the Gilad, as a territorial region, is settled by the grandson of Menashe, or conquered by the grandson of Menashe, and the territorial region of Chavot Yair is conquered by Yair ben Menashe. When? In the days of Moshe, post the battle of Sichon and Og? I don't think so.
Is this way before the Joseph and going down to Egypt?
No. Unlikely, because they're grandchildren of Joseph. Right. So they could not be before Joseph goes down to Mitzrayim. What is more likely is that the conquest of the territory of the Gilad and the conquest and the building of the cities of Chavot Yair by Yair ben grandson, great-grandson of Menashe, and by Machir, grandson of a son of Menashe, is taking place. When?
While everyone else is in Egypt.
Correct. Say it. Let's put the obvious on the table. When everybody else is in Egypt, Menashe's children are fighting for the conquest of the area of the Gilad and settling cities and building cities. Problem.
Why were they there?
Well, why not?
Why were they in Egypt?
Yaakov promised them the land of Israel, so they're back. They're conquering. They're settling.
Didn't they go down?
They were there. Menashe is born in Mitzrayim.
Right.
But he's a prince of Egypt.
He can go where he wants.
He can go where he wants. Wait, it gets even better. Look at the next pasuk. Pasuk of Gimel. Vayikach Geshur ve'aram et chavot Yair me'itam et knat ve'et bnatea shishim ir kol eile b'nei machir avi Gilad. Geshur and Aram took the cities that Yair had settled, chavot Yair, all 60 cities, and the sons of Machir b'nei Gilad. B'nai Machir Avi Gilad. I have 60 cities in this area called Hevel Agov, and they were all taken by
Geshur and Aram.
Geshur and Aram. Geshur and Aram are the locals. Geshur, Aram, Mesopotamia. So put the pieces of the story together. Let's put the pieces of the story together. Once upon a time, our ancestors were slaves in Egypt. Well, almost all of them were slaves in Egypt. Because a group of them, grandchildren of Menashe, were free and roaming and settling and conquering the land of their ancestral territory, which was to be known as the area of the Gilad.
It's pretty far from Egypt.
They settled there, they conquered there, they settled there, they took cities, they called the cities Chavot Yair. Yair is Menashe's great-grandson, Machir ben Menashe. Until such time as the local Canaanites kicked them out and took the cities back.
Where did they went back to Egypt?
And where's the rest of them sitting in Egypt? Some of them went back to Egypt. Some of them, I think, actually stayed. And we didn't do Yeshua together, correct?
Yeah.
In Sefer Yeshua, when I did this, when we learned Sefer Yeshua, we talked about the fact that the numbers of Shevet Menashe jump exponentially the moment Bnei Yisrael enter into the land of Israel. They're the smallest tribe throughout the 40 years in the desert. They're one of the largest tribes when they get into the land of Israel. Unclear as to why. But the theory that I would suggest, and I heard from Ephraim Dan, is that there are descendants of Menashe, and there are also descendants of Ephraim, living in the tribal territory of Menashe and Ephraim already there, waiting for the rest of Bnei Israel to come out of Egypt.
So they were not at Har Sinai?
No, which is why the Brit of Har Sinai gets repeated at Har Gerizim and Har Eva, and in Eva HaYarden. The Brit of Har Sinai is repeated three times. At Har Sinai, Eva HaYarden in Parshat Ki Tavo, Rachov HaKlalot, Moshe repeats all of the Torah, and at Har Gerizim and Har Eva. So the theory is, why does the Brit of Har Sinai have to be iterated three times? Because twice we reconnect with descendants of tribes that were not in Mitzrayim. The descendants of Menashe, who are in the area of the Gilad, and descendants of Ephraim, who is not part of our discussion today, but other psukim in Divrei Hayamim, who are sitting in the tribal territory of Ephraim, in the area of Shechem. Which explains a great deal about Chumash and the dynamic of what's going on. But coming back to the story of Yair, if you look back in Bamidbar Lamed Bet, I'll show you something very interesting. When it describes the conquest of that area, so back to Bamidbar Lamed Bet, starting with Pasuk Lamed Tet, Vayelchu b'nei Machir ben Menashe Gilada, the children of Machir ben Menashe went to the Gilad and settled it. Vayiten Moshe et haGilad leMachir ben Menashe, Moshe gave the Gilad to Machir ben Menashe. Next phrase, Vayair ben Menashe halach vayilkod et chavotahim. et chavotehem. Mitch, translate that phrase carefully. Do it again. Halach. Biblical Hebrew.
Had went.
Correct.
Had gone.
Remember the biblical rule, the grammatical rule. Vayelech, he went. Halach, had gone. In Tanakh, past perfect tense is depicted through the simple past verb with the subject of the verb placed before it. We've discussed that before. Right? He went, vayelech, using the future tense and the reversal verb. Hu halach means he didn't go, it means he had gone before. That's how biblical Hebrew depicts the past perfect tense. So vayelech, he went. Vayilkod, he conquered. Vayiten, Moshe gave. Vayair halach means Yair had gone to conquer. When? Now? At 150 or 200 years old? No, years before. Explaining to us why Moshe gave the Gilad to half of Menashe and why Moshe threw half of Menashe into the conversation with Reuben and Gad. For all of this conversation, he's been negotiating with Reuben and Gad between the Arnon and the Yabbok, the area of Sichon. When it came time to divvy up the land, he gave the area of Sichon to Reuben and Gad, and he gave the area of
Bashan.
The Gilad, and the north of the Gilad and the Bashan, to Menashe, half of Menashe. Why?
They were there already.
Because they've been sitting there for hundreds of years waiting for us. Because they've conquered it long ago, struggled with it. Territory, going back and forth. They conquered the cities, they called them Chavot Yair, then the Gishurites and the Maachites took it from them. And Og took it from them. Which, by the way, would explain another anomaly. This isn't really relevant to Shoftim, but it would explain another anomaly. Bnei Yisrael are coming in this way. Correct?
Right.
They're coming in across here. They're going to come to Yericho. So they've got to cut through the land of Sichon. Why on earth would they go all the way north up into the Golan to fight with Og? The optical illusion when we read Parshat Chukat is we think these two battles are happening here. This is the land of Sichon, this is the land of Og. Up here are the Golan Heights. Why does Moshe take the army of Israel all the way up into the Golan Heights just to come back down again to fight into Yericho? Let Yeshua deal with the rest of it. But I think he goes there precisely because there's descendants of Menashe there. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different mindset to the conquest of Israel. But I have cities in the area of the Gilad that are called Chavot Yair that were taken by Canaanites, Geshur, Macha, Aram, taken from Menashe. Comes along Yair Hagiladi, conquers 30 cities, settles 30 cities, rules, leads 30 cities in the area of the Gilad, and he calls them Chavot Yair. They're not the same Chavot Yair, remember they are the same, but it's not a reference to the same event from years before. I think it's a reference to Yair HaGiladi's attempt to settle these 30 cities that may or may not have been in Israelite control at that time, but may have belonged to his great-great-great-great ancestor, may have even shared the same name, Yair Ben Menashe, and that was part of the territorial claims over the region in the Golan Heights for all of these centuries.
They were cut off because the rest of the Jews were in Egypt. They didn't have an internet connection. They didn't have a telephone. I mean, they knew these people at some point had left Egypt. They didn't know that they weren't wiped out and destroyed. How did they know anything about... They didn't leave Egypt with Bnei Yisrael. How did they know they even existed anymore?
I'm assuming. Well, first of all, the Rabban Shalom certainly knew. So second, and number one.
And he spoke to Moshe daily.
Yeah, they had an ongoing memo. Number one. And number two, I'm assuming that that's part of their mission, which is to reconnect with the sectors of the tribes that were disconnected from Bnei Yisrael when they went down to Mitzrayim. And the two sectors that were disconnected were Dafka, the children of Menashe and Ephraim. It's a whole different piece. It's Dafka, the descendants of Menashe and Ephraim that are in the land of Israel waiting for us.
Wow.
If you want to see the piece about Ephraim, even though it's not relevant to our discussion, but just since we're filling in the pieces, it's Divrei Hayamim Aleph Perek Zayin. Starting with Pasuk Chaf. Uvnei Ephraim Shutalach. It goes to the lineage of Shevet Ephraim. Shetelach uvered beno v'tachab beno v'eladab beno v'tachab beno v'zabad beno v'shetelach beno v'ezer v'elad. The names repeat each other. And in the midst of this conversation about all of the names of the children and the grandchildren, v'haragum anshei gat hanoladim ba'aretz ki yardu lakachat et miknehem. They were killed by the residents of Gat, who were indigenous and born in the land, because they went to take their cattle. Who went to take whose cattle? Unclear. Mysterious psukim and mafarshim are struggle with. But vayit abel Ephraim avihem yamim rabim. Ephraim mourned over them. Ephraim is their father. These are the children of Ephraim. And Ephraim mourned over them for many days. Vayavo echav lenachamo. His brothers came to comfort him. He has another child, he names him Bri'ah, kind of a compensation for the children who were killed. Uvito, Ephraim's daughter, She'era, his name is She'era, Vativen et Beit Choron Tachton v'et Alyon v'et Uzen She'era. She built the cities of Beit Choron Tachton, Beit Choron Elyon, and Uzen She'era. Three cities in the tribal territory of Ephraim. Then we go back to the Yichus of Ephraim. Verefach b'no v'reshef, v'telach b'no v'tachah b'no, l'adam b'no, amihud b'no, elishama b'no, non b'no, Yehoshua b'no. Eight generations between Ephraim and Yehoshua b'no. So when did the story of the B'nai Ephraim who were killed by the children, by the people of the city of Gat, which is one of the cities in the area of Eretz Plishtim, when did the people of Gat kill the children of Ephraim and Ephraim mourn over them and their daughter She'era go and build the three cities of Beit Choron, Elyon Tachton, and Uzen She'era?
Again, while everybody else is still in Ephraim.
So there's a whole theory, there's a whole machloket as to when this took place. This, by the way, is the source of the famous story of Bnei Ephraim. The Chazal identify in the Medrash as having tried to leave Egypt 30 years before Moshe and failed or were killed, because they tried to leave Egypt early, and they're being mourned for. Right?
Dead bones.
Right? Another matters that connects them to the dead bones. But on a level of pshat, Ephraim is mourning for them. This is before the generation of Yeshua and Amihud. This is the generation of Ephraim's children. And they're settling in the land of Israel, in the area of Har Ephraim, building cities and waiting for the rest of Bnei Yisrael to come join them.
Is there any connection between Menashe and Ephraim leaving and going with Yaakov, where he says, take me back?
No, I think the connection is Yosef. Yosef, of all of the children, Yosef had a much stronger connection to the land of Israel. Of all the tribes of children of Yaakov, Dafka Yosef is the strongest connection. Remember, it's Yosef who says to them, take my bones back with you. Pakod yifkod alokim etchem. God will take you out of Egypt. And it's Yosef. So the notion that Yosef's children, Ephraim and Menashe, should be the ones to leave Mitzrayim early to go and settle the land of Israel should not surprise me. And that connects to the battle for Og here, and then the settle. It also explains why in the area of Shechem, which is in the middle of Har Ephraim, they're able to go. We talked about this. How is it that they're able to get to Shechem without a battle? They go to a battle of Yericho and a battle of Ai, then they march up to Shechem without so much as a skirmish. How do they get there? It's Canaanite territory. Unless the answer is it's not Canaanite territory, it's Ephraim territory. Changes the whole dynamic of the story of Sefer Yehoshua.
It's a good thing they settled where their inheritance was. What if Ephraim would have, or you know,
it's
what
reversed?
But they didn't. They left. They didn't know what their inheritance was.
It's reversed. Moshe gave the area of the Gilad to Manasseh because they're there already. It's the chicken and the egg.
But
it explains why Moshe adds the story of Reuven and Gad, of half of Manasseh to Reuven and Gad. Somebody's going to inherit this land. This land is indigenous to the tribe of Manasseh. That's going to be their territory. The conversation isn't over whether or not this land is going to be settled by Israelites or not. Somebody's going to settle there. It's which tribe is going to be assigned there. Reuven and Gad requested that this be theirs. So Moshe fine said, Reuven and Gad, you can stay here. In the meantime, this belongs to Manasseh.
And it's not that half of Manasseh is tagging along with the story of Reuven and Gad.
Correct.
It's Reuven and
Gad are
tagging
along
to
the story of half of Manasseh. Exactly. Suddenly the whole story is in reverse.
Cool.
Okay, that was our introductory 5-minute segue into the story of Yair Giladi. Now we can get to the primary subject of today's shiur, which is the 30 cities, the 30 donkeys, and the numbers. And this, I'll... All right, so what do I do with this?
Oh. Where
I'm glad I taped this, because none of this is on the Monday class.
Where did Shimon live if he was disinherited? Where did his descendants...
Where
did Shimon...
In Shevet Yehuda.
Within
Shevet Yehuda. He's given... That's recorded in Sefer Yehoshua. That he's given... 5 or 7 cities inside Shevet Yehuda. So much of this is related to what we did in Sefer Yehoshua, and when we did it in Yehoshua, we did it in much more depth. So I'm giving you the cliff notes, or the Coles notes, whatever they call it here in America. If you are interested, you can go back to the Shiurim and Yehoshua recorded and on the website, and they're numbered, they're titled. So if you want to explore it further, the shiurim are there. You're welcome to look at it. All right. Let's spend a few minutes and talk about the ayarim and the ayarim, the cities and the donkeys, which will lead us to a understanding, hopefully, of the 30, 60, 70 sons and grandsons. What is an ayar and what relevance does it have? What is the significance of these children riding on the ayarim in Ayarim? So the answer is really, I think, fairly straightforward. Now that we have the story of Chofet Yair behind us, I think it'll be even clearer. Intuitively, what would I expect the significance, or where would I search for the significance of the children riding on donkeys over cities, or in cities? What essentially is being described there? Say it.
Leaders of the city?
Leaders, correct. Regional leadership, control, regional governors.
It was a sign of upper echelon.
Sign of some kind of leadership position. Yeah. So, for example, what I've done on the source page to make life a little simpler is I put all the psukim in one page so we don't have to go flipping around everywhere. I tried to collect all the places where it talks about significant moments riding on a donkey. So we start, of course, with the reference to the Ayir, and that takes us to Yaakov's bracha to his children. To Shevet Yehuda, Yaakov says, Lo yasur Shevet mi Yehuda umechokek mi ben raglav. Translate. Lo yasur Shevet mi Yehuda umechokek mi ben raglav. The Shevet here means
the scepter
of leadership shall not depart from Judah, nor Mechokek. Mechokek is a lawmaker, a lawgiver, lawmaker. Meaning, it's another name for a Shevet. The scepter of leadership is the scepter of the executive as well as the legislative branch of government. Lo yasu Shevet miyuda u'mechokek miben raglav ad ki yavo shilo v'lo yikat tamim. Ad ki yavo shilo is a mysterious phrase which we're not going to resolve here because it's too mysterious for us for now. Till Shilo comes, till they come to Shilo. Is Shilo a reference to the Mishkan in Shilo? Is Shilo a reference to the name of Melech HaMashiach? Is Shilo a reference to some sort of shalom, reference to the word shalom? Mefarshim are literally all over the map. But the core message here is that we're talking about Yehuda as a form of leadership. Next pasuk, Yud Aleph. Osri la gefen iro, v'lasreka b'nei atono, kibes bayayin levusho v'dam anavim suto. He will tie his ire, ass colt, little donkey, to the vine, and to the vine he will connect his donkey, b'nei atono, one being older than the other. He will wash his clothes in wine, and in grapes his garments. What's going on? How do you wash your clothes in wine?
He's wearing purple.
Can I make him a specific color? No.
Wash your clothes in wine when you have, and why would you tie your donkey to the grapevine? What's he describing here? Tie your donkey, he'll tie his donkey to the grapevine and wash his clothes in wine. What's essentially he saying? It's a bracha, remember, at the end
if
of the day.
If he's pressing grapes, his clothes would get wine. I mean, maybe he's making wine.
He's making wine because each region of the country has a different agricultural bias. And the territorial region of Yehuda is partial to, anybody been to the Gush? Partial to
vineyards.
Correct?
You've got an awful lot of it.
Correct.
You're not worried that the donkey's going
to... That's exactly right. You have so much, you can wash your clothes in wine. That's the imagery. You'll be so wealthy, you'll be drowning in grapes because it'll be like a commodity like water. That's how fertile his land will be. Agreed? Two completely different images. But notice, what is Yehuda... What is the Mechokek, or the Shevet, the leader of Yehuda, riding?
A donkey.
An ayer.
We can have one up there all day, and every time you see
it. It was left here at Matzah Shabbos, and it's been sitting there ever since, just staring at us, trying to learn a little bit. The most famous reference to leadership, riding a donkey, which starts with the story of Yaakov's bracha to his children, goes from one end of the spectrum, ad ki avo shilo, to the other end of the spectrum, and that's the pasuk in Zechariah, which describes the time of the restoration of Malchut Yisrael. Hine malkech yavolach, your king will come to you, tzadik v'noshahu, righteous and victorious, ani, humble, which often translated as poor, but it means really in this context humble. V'rochev al chamor ve'al ayir ben atonot, riding over a donkey or over an ass colt. The imagery of Melech HaMashiach riding on a chamor. Then, if you go through Tanakh, new key moments where key biblical personalities are depicted as riding on a chamor or an aton. Moshe Rabbeinu, Avram Avinu, Avram on his way to the Akedah, Vayachavosh et chamoro, in source 3. Moshe on his journey down to Mitzrayim, in source 4. Vayarkivem al chamor, takes his family, rides on the donkey. In fact, Chazal tell us that the donkey that Moshe Rabbeinu rode was the same donkey that Avram Avinu rode. Midrashically connects them. That's the Medrash down below in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Bilam, most famous donkey in all of Tanakh. Bilam and his donkey. And similarly, the stories go on, so on and so forth. Melech HaMashiach is Ani V'Rechev Al Chamor. Meaning, if you think about the imagery, what animal depicts regal monarchy? What animal symbolizes Malchus in the imagery of society as a whole, historically?
It's not a horse.
The horse.
Horse, a beautiful horse.
Horse, always.
Always.
Mordechai, Esther, right? Matabash, Vayakoval Asuf, Vayakveval Asus. The horse is the symbol of Malchus in the ancient world and in the modern world. But not in Jewish contexts. Not in Tanakh. In Tanakh, the symbol of monarchy is the chamor, not the sus. We're not allowed to go and have too many horses. The melech is not allowed to create an army of horses. If he's not allowed to create an army of horses,
there's
then...
There's no limitation on donkeys?
There's no limitation on donkeys, because a donkey is not an animal of war.
It's humble.
A donkey is humble. That's the symbol of Melech HaMashiach, Hanivu Recheva Chamor. A donkey is a beast of burden. Right? They're strong, but they're not fast. They're not used for war. They're used for utility.
Yeah, that's the word.
Utility, functionality. And that's the imagery that the Melech of Tanakh, the Melech of the Navi, the Melech of rulership, the symbol of rulership in the world of Torah, is Dafka the Chamor. And building on that, Rav Kook has a number of places where he talks about the symbol of why the Chamor has a unique status in Jewish law and in Jewish tradition. Petach Chamor, there's a whole mitzvah of the firstborn of the Chamor, which is different from every other, right? There is no other mitzvah firstborn of a non-kosher animal.
It's great, Ben Susan isn't here. He always brings that up. What? The firstborn donkey.
Right. It has a unique status in Halacha. And the piece of it that Rav Kook explains is that the word chamor comes from the word chomer, which means physicality, material. The chamor is a beast of burden. It's a utility animal. It's physical. It's a symbol of physicality. And in that sense, it symbolizes the riding on the chamor symbolizes the whole essence of Jewish life, which is to take the physical and to elevate it. Kedushat HaChomer, as Rav Kook describes it. So the symbol in Jewish thought, the notion that from the very beginning, Avraham Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, Melech HaMashiach, Melech Yehuda, Rochev al HaChomer, riding Dafka the donkey, and not the sus, is because the symbol of the Jewish king is profoundly different than the kings of society. So Rechev al Ayir, person riding on a Ayir in the imagery of Tanakh, means governing, ruling, leadership. That's the positive side of the picture. What's the negative side of the picture? Who's riding these donkeys?
The sun.
The 30 sons, the 60 sons and sons-in-law, the 30 sons and 40 grandsons.
A lot of people think they're special.
What's going on? Over 30 cities, over 60 cities, over 70 cities. What's going on here? What's the core message of the theme of the period of history from Tola ben Puya, Ira Giladiv, Tzanavet Lechem, Ilonas Vulaniyav, Don ben Ilala Piratoni? What do we know about these shoftim? The only thing we know about them is they're having 30 sons and 60 sons and 70 children and grandchildren riding on 60 donkeys in 60 or 70 different cities. What are they doing?
There's a breakdown, in fact, of cohesive leadership. There's 60 or 30 or so many different people who take these positions.
You'd say it as a breakdown. I don't see it as a breakdown. I see it as something else completely, namely, exact opposite. Who are these 60 people, or 70 people, or 30 people? 60 or 30 or 70 arbitrary people in different places from different, all struggling and fighting for leadership? That's not what it says. They're all?
They're the sons,
or sons and grandsons of the Shofet.
What you talked about last time about inheritance of from Shofet usually doesn't
correct.
Happen.
There is no such thing as a dynasty in a Shofet environment. These are dynasties. This is a Shofet and his 30 sons ruling over 30 cities within the tribal region of the territory of the Shofet. This is Ya'ir HaGiladi in 30 cities called Chavot Ya'ir in the area of the Gilad with 30 sons. Or Yitzanu Bet Lechem, 30 sons, and he has 30 daughters. What does he do with his 30 daughters? He marries them off to 30 sons-in-law. So now he's got 60 heirs to rule over 60 different cities. Or 30 sons and 40 grandchildren and 70 descendants ruling over seven, each one riding a donkey, each one ruling over a city within the tribal region of the Shofet. What you have in all of these cases, what do they all have in common? They're all suffering from a unique condition. It's called the Gideonitis. They're all Gideon wannabes. What did Gideon do? How many children did Gideon have?
70.
How do you have 70 children? And if you remember, right, correct, it says, Kineshim Rabot Hayulo, because he had many wives. How many wives did he have?
Rabot.
Many. How many?
He had 70 kids.
I would tell you that I think he had 70 wives. Why do I think he had 70 wives? Because his 70 sons are not 70 sons. The 70 firstborns. Why do I have 30 sons and 30 daughters marrying out? Because the heir to the throne is whom?
Bechor.
Is the Bechor. But every wife is a Bechor. And every wife, therefore, has a potential heir to the throne. And the issue of Malchus revolves around which wife is your primary wife and therefore which of the firstborns is the heir to the throne. That's the key to unlocking this under the story of David HaMelech. He has three different sons and three different wives, each one rebelling for the rulership of the kingdom. The battle between Adoniyahu and Avshalom and David and Shlomo is over who's the primary wife of David. The emulation here of 30 sons and 30, 40 sons and 60 sons, they're all trying to go back to Gideon. They're all trying to reach Gideon's heels. When Avimelech came to Shechem and he said to the people of Shechem, do you want me to rule over you or do you want one of the 70 sons of Gideon to rule over you? What's the Havamina? What's the concept? What's the intent that one of the sons of Gideon would rule over them? Because that's what he was doing. He was putting each one of his sons in a different regional local territory. It's only natural that they came to Gideon and said, okay, be our king. And Gideon said, oh, king? No, I'm not going to be a king. But each one of my 70 sons will be a local governor. Until Avimelech killed them all. But he set a precedent in place. Tola ben Pua, Ya'ir HaGiladi, Tzanfim Bet Lechem, Elon, Avdon. Each one of them is looking to reach the level of the paradigm. The paradigm was set by Gideon, 70 sons, Nashim Rabot. And I suspect, therefore, that these are all firstborns, all riding donkeys. That's not 30 sons and each one of them is riding a donkey. It's 30 firstborns riding donkeys over cities. And the attempt to create regional, a dynasty in the sense of the Shofet's children in a particular city, ruling, leading, guiding, and inheritance. And we've run out of time, but if you go to the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, you'll see this is the story of Shmuel and Navi. When the people come to Shmuel, we read the passage once before, when the people come to Shmuel and they say, Shmuel, we don't want you anymore, we want to have a king, the pretense for it is because Shmuel had appointed his two sons as Shoftim in the city of Beersheba, and his sons were corrupt. But the image of Shmuel appointing his sons to be Shoftim in Beersheba is a carryover from here. And historically, the time frame is exactly sequential. These five shoftim take us from the period of Yiftach and the period of Shimshon directly to the period of Shmuel. That's the post-Gidon era. And it's confusing and it's open, and eventually it'll settle into a context of Malchut Yisrael. But for that, it will take time. Bezvat Hashem, our next session will be on Yiftach.